The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
My name is Elbert Lewis Jr.
And I'm Alan McIntyre. And together we welcome you back to our show, Black on Black Commentary. And the intended audience for our show is the black community. Yet others are encouraged and welcome to tune in. Each and every one of us has a unique bias when it comes to change or certain subjects. And I should warn you that the content of our program episodes is probably unlike anything you've heard coming out of the black community.
Again, I'd like to welcome you back and encourage you to keep an open mind and think for yourself. If you're not African American, we hope you'll listen in to our show as well. Our program is intended to educate our listeners and provoke serious thought. Each of our episodes will deal with a different topic of importance. Are you ready for some open and honest black-on-black commentary? Great, because it's time we talked. You know, Alan, I want to continue talking about the plight of black American, and more specifically, the inner cities, because it's come to my attention that, especially with the problems they're having with the default in Detroit and the financial problems in other large urban centers, that those urban centers are starting to look like third world societies. If you really examine the plight and the condition of people who live in third world societies, it might be elevated to another level, but in a sense, it's exactly the same. You have people who are not participating fully in the society. There's a situation where these people don't have the resources of the general society. They are subject to violence from people who have illegal weapons. They don't have the education levels of the general society. Just all in all, we have a situation, I'm afraid, where we have these urban centers that are sinking into third world status. And I believe that this is a critical issue for black Americans and for Americans, for all Americans, because we have to do something. Now, what that is, I don't know, but I know something has to be done.
The key words that you said that resonated with me were when you said all Americans. And when you initially began talking about the plight of black America, my mind kind of started including all Americans and how the plight of black America impacts all Americans. I recently gave a speech and I very vaguely touched on that. But here's what I'm concerned with. Now, speaking about the black American, especially the inner city America, you look at the high crime rate, and you look at the lack of how can I put it?
Educational attainments.
Well, that as well. Oh, yeah. But you look at the lack of patriotism. I think you see a lot of declining things in the black community. Now, here's the problem with that. Not only does it negatively impact the black community, but it impacts white America.
Absolutely.
So white America should be very much interested in the plight of the black community, because that's going to help America as a whole move forward. Now, another thing that I see happening, and I can understand why it's happening. Let's take Detroit for an example. Detroit is a beautiful city, really, when you really look at it. At one point in time, it was a very prosperous city, and Ford built that city. Now, I'm beginning to see some animosity about what's going on in the black community and how it has negatively impacted many of our large urban core areas. And that animosity, I'm talking about animosity coming from other races. And I can't say
that. Animosity towards black people.
Yes. You take a large urban area like Detroit, something that America used to be able to be very proud of, and then you look at the decline that happened in Detroit, I think it is a very direct result of a lot of the decline that happened in the black community. Because at one point in time in Detroit, you had a very prosperous black community. And when I'm talking about the decline, I'm talking about the decline and the breakdown in morals, values, criminal activity, and stuff like that. That as you, I think you would admit, a lot of this stuff is very acceptable the black community is beginning to accept this as just the way it is.
Absolutely. And that's among certain classes of black people. There is a reluctance to uphold the white standard or the middle class standard. And I think that has brought about a lot of the problems. Because when you don't uphold that standard, then you have a situation where kids are dropping out of school, young girls are having multiple births out of wedlock, that kids they can't afford or know how to raise. You have rampant drug use. And the worst of all, and I think that the worst problem, is the rise of acceptance of street crime and gang activity. Because that, to me, is indicative of third world nations where you have warlords and people with weapons, military weapons, that are basically running things in this society, where you have the largest society actually sitting back and looking at this and saying, if those people accept it, what can we do? And I'm just saying that if the largest society continues to have that attitude, that this growing third world status in urban America is going to negatively affect the whole country.
Okay, look at white flight. Okay,
and they took a large part of the tax base with them.
Exactly. Well, back to one quick point on Detroit. At one point in time, I believe they had the highest income in the country, the people in Detroit on average. But let me say this. Let's look at white flight. White flight, a lot of people look at it as racist. No, that's a very natural response.
Oh, absolutely.
Crime increase.
Absolutely.
Schools go down in quality of education received. Guess what? I'm leaving.
Right, and the safety of
many people
is
are going to leave.
Here.
But what has happened also, now you see white return. People are coming back, moving into the inner city core, reinvesting, restaurants, new housing, and businesses and whatnot. That tells me something. That tells me if at one point in time I was here in the urban core and I moved out because of things that were taking place, now I'm moving back in and I'm reinvesting into this urban core. That ties back into the whole resentment thing that I mentioned to you.
Hold on. Okay, I agree. It might be happening locally.
No, it's happening all across the country.
No. Chicago.
Wait, hold on, Albert.
Philadelphia, Compton.
No, you're wrong.
We've never had a situation like that.
Yes, we did.
I've been here all my life.
That's why you had white flight.
Never had that.
If you don't think you've had it, I guarantee you 15 years ago, you would not have gone down on Vine Street and stood out between the hours of 12 and 2. You wouldn't have done it.
I don't think I would do that regardless of what city I lived in.
But you can do it in your community where you live.
True.
Now, what you see in these cities is a resurgence of white people moving back into the city. Now, back to the animosity thing. If I had initially invested in something, had to give it up and move away from it, I'm going to hold some type of animosity. Now I'm moving back in, reinvesting, rebuilding something back up. Now, guess what attitude I have? Nobody had better not mess this up again.
Well, it would be fine if that was working in the really, I would say, serious urban environments like Detroit and Chicago. But I just heard recently
that
the administration, the mayor and administration in Detroit is planning on selling vacant houses for a dollar and trying to entice people to move back into the city.
It could work.
Maybe, I don't know. This is the other thing that's happening. White flight occurred, but now we have a situation.
Black flight happened too.
Yes,
okay.
And black flight is accelerating because you have a situation in Detroit right now.
Which proves my theory that it's not racist.
No, it's not.
It's just people wanting to have a good living.
Absolutely. A safe environment for their kids.
Exactly.
The best education opportunities. So, that's the reason. In 1980, I moved out of the city into the suburbs, basically for the educational opportunities. I got married. My wife was a teacher.
And that's a good reason to move.
Right. And she taught in the system, and she said, no way should we keep these kids in the system. So we moved out to the suburbs. But now black flight is happening for different reasons. They're fleeing, I believe, the third world status of the inner city, especially in places like Detroit, where they can't keep the lights on. The trash doesn't get picked up. Mm-hmm. Crime is rampant. Gangs are pretty much rule the streets. Mm-hmm. And so if this continues, what's going to be left in those inner cities except poor, uneducated black people who don't have any hope. And the cost of maintaining those urban areas that are
where
basically...
there's no tax base.
Right, that are basically third so world enclaves.
We're talking more resentment because somebody has to pay for it.
Absolutely. And somebody is going to be living there, and it's going to cost much, much more than if we come in and somehow do something about this now before it gets to the point where it's almost irreversible.
Well, let me tell you something. That's the reason why it's very important that people begin to move back into those areas and reclaim those areas. I'm talking about white and black. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's going to take that.
And you come back in and you reclaim those areas. And basically what happens is, I think it's kind of leading by example. You know, there's going to be a number of people that are currently residing there who aren't doing too well. And I'm going to argue that many of them aren't doing too well. It's pretty much their own doing. But I think I think you can kind of lead by an example and inspire those people to say, you know what? I'm going to have civic pride. I'm going to take responsibility for my community. I'm going to walk out front and pick up some trash. I'm going to make my kids walk out there and clean up in front of our brownstone, in front of our house. And, you know, it can all begin with pride and civic pride and civic responsibility.
Right. But there's two issues, though. Number one, if whites do return to the inner cities,
which they are doing,
there's a resurgence and a rejuvenation. Then you have property values going up,
mm-hmm.
and where do people who don't have education, don't have high-paying jobs, what happens to them? And the other issue is, do successful, productive blacks have a duty to, in a sense, give back? Because if you're a successful black person, a productive black person, you recognize the opportunities that are inherent in this system. Do we have a duty to go back and try to do something black people?
I have a very serious problem with the whole, with two things you said. Give back. I'm never going to give back because I didn't get anything. I don't care if I grew up in the suburbs or the inner city. I don't have any obligation to give back because I've earned. Nobody gave. And that's one of those socialist type of talking points. Oh, I hear athletes all the time talking about giving back. What do you mean give back? You earned that scholarship.
Right,
you got
right.
the grades. You made it to the NFL, NBA, whatever, wherever you made it in life, whether it's corporate America, whatever. I'm not giving back. Now, will I be charitable and turn around and help people that I see are in need? Yeah, but giving back, nobody gave me nothing. I'm so sick of that give back mentality.
That be enough? Because this is what I see. And I spent 10 years in various mentoring programs and tutoring programs where I was involved with my local university. I was involved in the local school system. And I found that if you're involved and trying to be charitable, try to help people along that somehow may not see the light, the few hours that you give on a daily or weekly basis, can it compensate for someone who might be working 24/7 doing really self-destructive things that they really screw up their lives?
Let me tell you the best way to give back. And you know, I don't like that term, but I'm just going to use it so people can really understand what I'm saying. The best way for me or anybody else to give back is by being productive and creating opportunities. For example, the best way I feel like I can give back, let me start a business and employ some people. Now I've created opportunity for them to be employed.
True.
And for example, Obama loves to knock big business. Why would you knock big business when do you realize that through big business, for example, we'll name any company. Let's say me and you go out and start a company like Kroger. We give people the ability to pay their mortgages, pay their mm-hmm. rents, put their kids through school, have transportation, go out on the town, enjoy themselves. That's what big business does for the common man. It gives him the ability to rise above his means. And maybe eventually he'll mimic big business and create his own business.
Right.
It's
obvious why Obama
that's the best way to give back is by going out here being productive.
And creating opportunity.
Right.
But in question to your question, it's obvious why Obama knocks big business and business in general is because he's a typical limousine liberal. And
exactly.
They firmly believe that government is the answer, is the solution, that government can help rise all boats with the tide. And that's never going to work.
Let me throw this in real quick.
But there's a problem with,
you're right, it
with
never
business
will work.
And corporations doing it, because there has been a trend of the corporations to take jobs out, not only out of the urban centers, but out of the country.
Well, they've been forced in that position in order to stay in business and be viable and compete with foreign business entities.
Not force. It's greed.
No, no. They've actually been forced because
there's an element of greed there.
Well, here's the thing. If you have big government, liberal big government leaning on you, wanting every dime they can extract from your profits, guess what? At some point in time, you cannot remain in this country and pay the wages that are necessary to be paid and the benefits and remain profitable and to be able to compete with foreign entities. Now, here's my thing. And that you have that happening to big businesses here in this country because liberals want to extract every dime and every penny they can get the Democrat Party because what do they want to do? They want to fund their entitlement programs. And why are they so interested in funding their entitlement programs? Not because they're charitable, because they know as long as they fund those programs, those people that are dependent upon them are going to always be a Democrat voting class supporting that party in spite of the fact that that party is really teaching them to become a slave dependent upon
that's
the system.
Right. And that, to me, is one of the key factors in
the
third world status of the inner cities.
Exactly.
It's that dependent class of people. And I'm sorry to say that President Obama, Democrats, liberals in general, are really perpetuating this situation. And I don't know if they realize it or not. Maybe they do and don't care. I don't know. But
they realize it because it was intentional. And of course, and let me follow up with that saying, they don't care because guess what? It's getting them votes. It's keeping them in power. They're only interested in holding on to power. That's it. So if
that's any politician. You know, I can't really fault them for that.
Okay,
that's politics in general.
Well, okay,
but
you're
to
right.
intentionally create a situation where you know that your policies are perpetuating and even aggravating a situation where the environment that people live in, some
for the sake of keeping power,
is sliding into a third world status. I think
it's a very clandestine, nefarious thing to do. Now, let me tell you this. Every political party, you're right, does want to maintain power.
Absolutely.
But for different reasons. My problem and your problem is the reason why the Democrats want to hold on to power and what they're willing to do it. And they're doing it right now at the expense of a whole group of minorities.
Okay,
I would argue this as well. I would argue that libertarians, let me throw this out there, libertarians, as well as real Republicans, I'm not talking about rhinos, Republican name, I'm talking about true conservative, rank and file Republican people.
I'm glad you said true conservatives.
Yeah, not the establishment within the party, but the people within the party. They want to hold on to power. Let me tell you for what reason why the Tea Party, the conservative Republicans, libertarians want to hold on to power because they want to preserve our liberties, the Constitution, this American way of life. And they realize what the alternative is that the Democrats are offering. It's a socialist, communist, Marxist alternative that we want no part of.
I agree. And I think that before this thing gets out of hand, the true conservatives had better grow a backbone and get some courage and do something in government to arrest this and bring it to an end and start to reverse the process. Else, this country is going to have hell to
pay.
And
let me add this. That's the reason why when you hear me speak, if you watch my videos, whatever, I'm always talking about conservatives have better get off their asses if they want to save this country.
Absolutely. Give it some thought, and together, perhaps we can all ensure our country's future history and have it be something we can be proud of.